It is not all that easy to talk about legalizing drugs, not even suggesting the possibility that somebody should study the question. ABC's Hugh Downs has some thoughts.
Toward the end of 1993, the Surgeon General of the United States, Dr. Joycelyn Elders, addressed the National Press Club. Dr. Elders' speech was about violence in the streets and the home. Violence is an obvious health issue because violence injures and kills. After her remarks, the Surgeon General was asked if she thought crime could be reduced if drugs were made legal. The Surgeon General said, "I do feel that we would markedly reduce our crime rate if drugs were legalized, but I don't know all the ramifications of this. I do feel that we need to do some studies. In some of the countries that have legalized drugs and made it legal, they certainly have shown that there has been a reduction in their crime rate and that there has been no increase in their drug use rate." End of quote. Well, Dr. Elder's suggestion caused a stir. The White House immediately distanced itself from the Surgeon General's remarks and claimed that no such studies were even being considered. Unfortunately, despite the claims of some journalists that Dr. Elder's remarks triggered a debate, her remarks did not trigger a debate. Her remarks, or more precisely, the reactions to her remarks, only underscored the fact that she had touched on a taboo subject. We treat a very small number of certain drugs as special cases. Some drugs are treated like sacred cows. When we hear phrases like legalized drugs or war on drugs, we should remember that the word drugs in these cases implies a relatively short list, primarily heroin, cocaine, and marijuana. We should also remember that aside from those particular drugs, virtually every other drug known to medical science is already legal. Thousands of drugs that can kill or maim or entice addictions are already legal, and they can all be obtained with prescriptions at corner retail stores. These dangerous substances are used every day by literally millions of people. We call these dangerous substances medicines. Now, it's important to realize that there is no war on medicine. The word drugs in the so-called war on drugs refers only to certain substances. And at least one of those substances, marijuana, is not even considered dangerous. If Dr. Elders is looking for studies, she might want to contact Dr. Frederick H. Myers, professor of pharmacology at UC San Francisco. Dr. Myers and his panel of drug experts has conducted a yearly assessment of drug use for the state of California for more than 20 years. But in 1989, when the panel recommended that it was time to permit marijuana cultivation for personal use, the Attorney General's office censored the report. Evidently, it is taboo even to discuss the use of some drugs, especially cocaine, heroin, and marijuana. But it's okay to discuss and use other equally potent drugs. Drugs like Dilaudid, Placidil, Demerol, alcohol, tobacco are all licensed and controlled by the government. The black market in these legal dangerous drugs is minuscule. The violence surrounding them is insignificant, and they are connected to no drug fortunes at all. Culture and history may explain why we perceive these drugs differently from others, but today, the big reason that some drugs are legal and some drugs are illegal has a lot to do with money and power. Fighting drug use consumes an enormous amount of money. The most recent war, the one perpetrated by Mr. Reagan and Mr. Bush, has now wasted a total of more than $100 billion of dwindling tax money. Making some drugs illegal also automatically creates drug dealers. And those drug dealers have extorted at least as much money from our weakened economy. The illegal drug industry represents a gigantic, untapped, and untaxed underground economy. In some states, like California and Texas and Florida, it may be larger than the legal economy. Of course, nobody knows for sure because it's all illegal. We do know that taxpayers already lost $100 billion on the drug war. The underground economy is surely close to that. And if we start adding up all those hundreds of billions of dollars, we get some astronomical numbers. Stopping the war on drugs immediately would save not one fortune, but quite literally millions of fortunes. Stopping the war would also provide other benefits. Our overcrowded prisons could be used once again to house dangerous criminals instead of drug users. Todd Clear, a professor of criminal justice at Rutgers, says 60% of the federal prison population is drug-related, compared to only 8% in 1975. Another benefit would be to dismantle the corrupt machinery now used to fight drug use. The illegal drug industry has become a symbiotic combination of both cops and robbers. The tremendous fortunes created by illegality have eaten away at legitimate law enforcement and dragged many otherwise good individuals down to the level of common criminals. In some cases, whole institutions have succumbed to crime. The temptation to make big money from the drug trade is tremendous. The web of corruption riddles law enforcement at unprecedented levels. A recent trial of corrupt policemen in New York was stupefying. Almost all police corruption would stop instantly if the drugs now illegal came under government control instead. It's easy to imagine how an individual policeman or an individual DEA investigator might be tempted by big drug money. Some drug dealers have enough money to offer a cop the equivalent of several years' salary, in some cases just to do nothing. They may only be asked to look the other way or just keep silent. Some of the people who are now serving time behind bars for drug violations once served as law enforcement officials. And conversely, some people who now work for law enforcement agencies once served criminal organizations. In fact, a large part of the drug war depends on such informants. The symbiotic dependence between criminals and authorities should be brought to an end. Drug seizure laws have become so irrational that we now see law enforcement institutions, not just single individuals, fall into criminal activity. Not long ago, a law-abiding man in Southern California, a man named Donald Scott, was attacked and shot to death by law enforcement agents who simply wanted his property. Newspapers around the country reported the story, and we did a segment on it on 2020. Donald Scott had no drugs at all, but under the zero-tolerance laws, police organizations were permitted to kill him and steal his private property, all legally, on the mere stated suspicion that he had drugs on the property. Recently, the Supreme Court decided that zero tolerance had been grossly abused. Now, accused people must have a hearing before their property is taken. We find another abuse of common sense in the tangle of foreign policy and illegal drugs. American intelligence agencies, especially the CIA, are known to work closely with drug dealers. Supposedly, the reasons they do is to fight the drug war. But often, as we only recently discovered in Haiti, the CIA will create an intelligence outfit that turns to smuggling cocaine into the U.S. for the money. The notorious drug lords of Colombia actively supported the Reagan and Bush administration's war against Nicaragua. When Congress refused to give money to that illegal war, the Colombian cocaine lords gave millions of dollars to the so-called Contras. When money was not sent to them, the Contras smuggled drugs on their own. The Contras, like Noriega in Panama and the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, were criminals who were supported with U.S. tax money. Significantly, none of these groups smuggle scotch or tobacco. Here in the U.S., thousands of local goons are organized into gangs. The war on drugs has pumped billions of dollars into the pockets and holsters of these thugs. If the government seized their drugs, if the government licensed, regulated, taxed, and patrolled the drug markets, the way it already does with all other legal drugs, then the profits flowing to local gangs would stop. Unfortunately, some politicians have built careers on the very instability that violence and the drug war cause. Social instability provides some politicians and some institutions with jobs. If the government took control of drugs, a lot of people would be out of jobs. The anti-drug crusaders, or the tough-on-crime lobby, thrives on the drug war. Their dependence on crime and drugs is intimate and inseparable, the very definition of symbiosis. This observation has led me finally to realize that many an anti-drug crusader has actually come full circle and now stands foursquare as a pro-crime booster. The question comes down to this: who will control these drugs, the authorities or the criminals? One answer is legal, the other is itself criminal. Dr. C. Everett Koop once told us that tobacco addiction is more tenacious than heroin addiction. Tobacco drug dealers are legal, and they are not involved in public shootouts with the authorities. And yet, despite the tenacity of tobacco addiction, we have managed dramatically to reduce tobacco consumption in this country without making tobacco illegal. Tobacco is a very harmful drug. Efforts to dissuade people from using it are, to my mind, quite proper. But any move to keep it from people by force will be counterproductive. The worst thing we could do would be to make it illegal. If cigarettes were outlawed, an appalling wave of crime would engulf us, as a new class of drug barons would rise to supply smokers with their cigarettes. And since they'd be operating outside the law, we would have a new war to deal with, a war on cigarettes. Until the campaign of persuasion has reduced the number of people who would start smoking, it remains a major health problem worldwide. Someone once estimated that more Colombians die every year from smoking American tobacco than do Americans die from Colombian cocaine. And yet it remains taboo even to discuss the legalization of certain drugs and not others. Why is this? Some think it's because too many people and institutions profit from the so-called drug war. That seems like a slightly paranoid view, but it's hard to shake. Legalization means getting rid of the criminals and the violence and putting the government in charge. Legalization means taking the health problem of drug addiction out of the hands of the Attorney General and putting it in the hands of the Surgeon General, where it belongs. Apparently not even the Surgeon General herself can bring up such a possibility right now without being rebuked. There was an old Puritan law against speaking the truth unseasonably. With the political problems facing the Clinton administration right now, there must be a feeling at the White House that Joycelyn Elders should not at that unseasonable moment have brought up the subject of drug legalization. This is Hugh Downs, ABC News, New York.
We're feeling it, we're running out of time. We have a choice, we must be wise. Give back, let's realize. Here we are on a sphere. Tell me where you gonna go from here. What you doing, are you in there? Or are you giving it to fear? Thinking we're alone, we sit. Piling up the industrial shit. Come on, people, we have to side. And genocide just isn't it, no. A revolution. Feel it all around you. A revolution.
Arrests are made, huge quantities of drugs are seized, a regular occurrence. But the war on drugs is not working, and perhaps it's because we're going about it all wrong. ABC Hugh Downs has some thoughts.
Recently, a group of conservative thinkers at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University signed a resolution calling for an end to the war on drugs. The reasons they gave were compelling. More drugs are consumed today than before the war began. Police organizations are undermined by the war, and some have even succumbed to corruption. And foreign policy decisions have sided with drug ideologies at the expense of U.S. interests. The war on drugs is a catastrophe. Drugs, whether legal or illegal, are all, technically speaking, pharmaceuticals. Pharmaceuticals are studied by physicians, pharmacists, chemists, and other health professionals. If a person, for whatever reason, takes too much of a drug or becomes habituated to a drug so that it interferes with well-being, then that person has a health problem. And anyone with a health problem should see a physician. But because of the war on drugs, people with health problems are handed over to policemen, to federal agents, and to customs and immigration officials to be punished. Punishment is silly, ineffective therapy. By using the same logic, we might just as well declare a war on cancer. Imagine how ineffective a shooting war against cancer would be. Anyone suspected of having a cancerous growth would be handed over to the police. And once proven, the cancer suspect would be put not into a hospital, but into a jail.
And when the jails fill up, we'd build more jails because, and this is true, cancer kills. We would declare zero tolerance on cancer. If we fought a war against cancer that way, the way we fight the war against drugs, we'd also eliminate research. We'd close all the cancer institutes and stop the sales of anti-cancer drugs because knowledge calls attention to a pathology we'd sooner forget, and the drugs would be linked in the mind with the disease. A research lab that attempted to induce cancer in cells in order to study them would be seen in war as helping the enemy grow. And then, as a total ban settled in place, we'd see drug smuggling, anti-cancer drugs, including everything from sophisticated chemotherapies to aspirin and vitamin C, would be manufactured illegally in, say, Colombia, smuggled into Florida. These drugs would be impure, unregulated, and expensive. U.S. law enforcement efforts would be as unable to keep out the aspirin and the vitamin C as they are unable today to keep out the cocaine, marijuana, and heroin. Illegality creates artificial markets. A smuggler who pays $500 for a package of cocaine in Mexico can sell that same package in New York for $100,000. The enormous incentive to smuggle is economic, and illegality creates the economy. If we made antibiotics illegal, the same thing would happen. Entrepreneurs would manufacture, say, ampicillin or tetracycline or whatever in Mexico, and smugglers would sneak them into the United States. And make no mistake, users of antibiotics would do just about anything to obtain them. Antibiotic users would become as desperate as heroin or cocaine users under the proper circumstances. If your mother or sister or father or brother were dying from a bacterial infection, even you might steal or might even kill to obtain an antibiotic drug. Desperation and need are only matters of circumstance and degree. Mr. Joseph McNamara, a retired police chief of San Jose, California, was one of the signers of the Hoover Institution resolution. The reasons he gave for stopping the war on drugs are compelling and worth quoting at length. Mr. McNamara says that the signers did not call for legalizing drugs, but we did point out that crime and drug use have worsened during the 20-year drug war. The resolution noted that taxpayers have spent billions of dollars in an effort which has led to widespread corruption and violence and which is undermining governments throughout the world without achieving its stated goals, namely reducing drug abuse and crime. In addition, the war on drugs has jailed disproportionate numbers of minorities and spawned both hostility and destructive fear of the police. The Hoover resolution noted that drug war hysteria has blocked programs to provide sterile needles to prevent the spread of AIDS and has barred the use of drugs from medical research and by physicians to relieve pain. Perhaps the all-time high in government paranoia is the resistance to making marijuana available to relieve pain and nausea suffered by cancer patients during chemotherapy. A war against drugs does for drug abuse what pruning does for plant growth. It strengthens and makes it a larger and more widespread phenomenon. The drug war has strengthened and subsidized an immense criminal institution. Illegal drug dealers feel it necessary to be armed in order to do business. Consider a simple example. Suppose that a heroin seller gets burned on a deal. His buyer leaves town without paying. The only thing the seller is likely to do is to physically apprehend the deadbeat and beat him dead, if necessary, to extract the money owed. And now look at a dispute between two drug dealers who are not criminals. Let's say that a distributor for Marlboro cigarettes sells a case of tobacco to a local Safeway store. And now let's say that the Safeway manager pockets the money and refuses to pay the Marlboro man for this case of drugs. What happens? I can tell you one thing that does not happen. The Marlboro man does not shoot up the local Safeway to get his money. He sues the company in a civilized court of law, and the differences are worked out rationally and legally. Tobacco is a dangerous drug. It's been declared more addictive than heroin, and it kills. The Surgeon General estimates that tobacco will kill over 400,000 Americans this year alone. Unlike heroin, tobacco is widely available and costs little. And yet, despite the fact that tobacco is more dangerous as a drug than heroin, thousands of people give it up every month. We could save a lot of money in lives and prison space if we applied the same common-sense anti-smoking campaign to other drugs. But common sense is in short supply when it comes to illicit drugs. The Hoover Institute's resolution complained that President Reagan spent over $20 billion fighting the war and produced very little. Then President Bush spent more than $40 billion. The resolution pointed out that during Mr. Bush's war on drugs, actual crime, including murder, robbery, and assault, rose dramatically. The American public has been fed misinformation and even disinformation about drugs. The resulting hysteria has warped our sense of proportion. Consider these figures. Drunk drivers kill about 22,000 people every year and cause over $40 billion worth of damage. The overall death toll due to alcohol is nearly 100,000 people. Alcohol costs society about $85 billion a year. Illegal drug use, all of it put together, accounts for about 21,000 deaths per year at a total cost of about $58 billion. Obviously a bad thing. But unlike the drunk driving deaths, the death toll due to illegal drugs includes overdose, disease, and violence. Drunk drivers and drug users also have entirely different experiences before the law. According to Mark Maher, assistant director of the Sentencing Project, drunk drivers are treated by the criminal justice system as people with problems, while drug users are treated as criminals. Drunk driving usually winds up as a misdemeanor that results in license suspensions, community service, or small fines. Drug possession, on the other hand, is usually booked as a felony that leads to a long prison term. Mr. Maurer reminds us that these differences cannot be explained by the relative harm to society and have a disparate impact on low-income populations and minorities. Well, significantly, most drunk drivers happen to be white males, and most people arrested for possession of illegal drugs happen to be Hispanic or African. Drug charges account for a quarter of all prison inmates. And remember, the U.S. incarcerates more of its citizens than any nation on earth, and that includes Iraq, Iran, and South Africa. Keeping drug users in jail costs us plenty, too, about $6 billion a year. Over the years, the drug war has spent hundreds of billions of dollars and has managed to make the situation worse. The drug war is responsible for the ubiquity of firearms and the unhesitating inclination to use them. War means guns, and the drug war is no exception. The armed drug war has also been carried internationally and rages from the Afghan opium fields to the cocaine labs in Colombia. U.S. soldiers have lost their lives fighting for one drug interest over another. American foreign policy has on several occasions been determined by the politics of drugs at the expense of our own U.S. interests. The drug war has also mangled trust. Children spy on their parents, and parents spy on their children. Neighbors spy on each other, and companies spy on workers. Private property, homes, automobiles, boats, airplanes, and trucks can be, and many have been, seized summarily by authorities because of drug involvement. The hysteria against drugs is extreme. A commercial for a breakfast cereal nervously announces that its flakes are a drug-free way to regularity. This rupture in common sense has sacrificed the peace enough times in the past that we might want to look forward to new strategies for the future. The priority should be to stop drug abuse, not to promote it, to help law enforcement and not undermine it, and to dismantle criminal organizations, not build them up. If these are our real goals, then we now have the opportunity not of legalizing drugs, but of getting them under federal supervision and control by decriminalizing them. This opportunity was recently given a strong impetus when the conservative Hoover Institution's resolution urged the nation to stop the war on drugs. This is Hugh Downs, ABC News, New York.
From the reach the creek through the swamps of